Morning. Today's daf in Chulin Kuf Lamed Dalet. We're on Kuf Lamed Gimel Mid Beis. We're towards the top of the Amud, and we're talking about partnerships, specifically creating partnerships with either non-Jew or with a coin over an animal, and the exemption that it creates from the matanos. We are in the 10th parak of the Masechta of Chulin, and this parak is dedicated to the topic of matanos kahuna. This is the last daf of the parak. And in the Mishnah, we learned together that a partnership between a Jew and a non-Jew creates an exemption. If you look back at the Mishnah, Kuf Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, so the Mishnah, Ashocha Lekona Ovei Kochavim, Patur Min HaMatanos. If he shecht on behalf of a Kohen and an Ovei Kochavim, I'm sorry, that's just shechting when they are the owner. V'hamishtati Fimahem, there we go, next line of the Mishnah. V'hamishtati Fimahem Sarach Shiyirshom. So if you make a partnership with them, you have to make a Rishim, you have to make some sort of sign on the meat itself. Somehow, they had a cut in the meat, which we became clear and evident, that this meat was partnered meat. This meat was owned in a partnership, and therefore it's exempt. Now, the Mishnah then goes on to say, V'im amar chutz min ha-matanos, patur min ha-matanos. If the sale excluded the matanos, then you're going to be exempt from the matanos, and that we're going to be discussing a little bit later on this morning. But in the meantime, however, so our discussion revolves around a partnership created between a Jew and a non-Jew, and as a result of that, so there's going to be an exemption. It's just a question in the Mishnah of whether or not you need to make a reshima. You have to make some sort of mark on the meat to show that a partnership has in fact been created. The Gemara is bothered that there are other times that a reshima is not necessary, where you don't have to make some sort of a special mark on the meat. And the Gemara asked that question yesterday and resolved that question yesterday. And we are continuing in the Gemara right where we left off. Amar. Upsulim Mugdashim ain't Sarach Lirshom. When it comes to Psulim Mugdashim, there's no need to mark. Psulim Mugdashim, we are in Kuflam Gimel Mid Base. We are about 8 lines on the top of the Amud, 2 lines as the lines start getting wide. Psulim Mugdashim, let's just reacquaint ourselves. And anytime you have a carbon that had Kedushas Aguf and it got a blemish, so now it is subject to being redeemed. You could redeem it and you can eat it. That's about all you can do with Psula HaMukdashim. It has some sort of vestiges of Kedusha. We already learned earlier, you can't work it, you can't shear it, you can't milk it. So there are some of the most basic activities still can't be done with it, because once upon a time it was a carbon. But what you're allowed to do is you're allowed to eat it. And the Gemara over here is discussing a scenario in which you're actually going to be selling it in the marketplace. So Psula HaMukdashim and Sarach Lirsham, so there's no need to make a Rishima, meaning even though it's being sold, but there doesn't have to be any kind of special mark. Ama Mucha Milsa. So the Gemara says, so what does that mean that there's no mark? So presumably what it means is that there's no mark because there's some sort of clear indication that this is Psula HaMukdashim. And now how is there a clear indication? So it must be that the way it's sold. Now, generally speaking, when you're selling Psula HaMukdashim, so how is it going to be sold? So it's not going to be sold like regular meat that you're selling in the market. Regular meat that you're selling in the market, so it's meat. It's just a simple commodity, and you're selling it by measuring it against a weight. In other words, simple commercial activity. However, when it comes to Psula HaMukdashim, so it's not sold in such a manner. And the reason why it's not sold in such a manner is because, again, once upon a time it was a carbon. We got to treat it respectfully. Even though there's a heter achila, you're allowed to eat it. But still, you can't treat it like a quote-unquote regular piece of meat. Good. V'hanan tanan, the Gemara says, I'll tell you the problem. The problem is a Mishnah Becharos. Mishnah Becharos, Psula HaMukdashim, Nimkar, Be'et Laz, Menishchat, Be'et Laz, Menishchal, Be'litra. So the Mishnah in Becharos says that when meat is sold, which has residual kedusha, so it is sold, and it is done so, and it's sold normally. The sale of these items are sold normally, and so now we're a little bit confused. Our Mishnah gives a simple indication, or yesterday's Brisa, better stated, gives a simple indication that Psula HaMukdashim is not sold in a regular manner, which again, as I explained just a moment earlier, makes perfect sense. It had residual Kedusha. But meanwhile, the Mishnah Bechor says it is sold in a regular manner. So, Tirgama Rav Ada Ba'ava Kamed Rav Papa Osam Nim Karim Besoch Abayis. So the Gemara says, well, it depends where exactly it is sold. Where exactly it's sold, why should it make a difference whether it was sold out of the house or in the market? Take a look at Rashi. Rashi explains over here beautifully. I'm reading the Rashi inside. What can be sold, quote-unquote, normally, regularly, and what has to be sold with a bit of a shinui and cannot be sold in the marketplace? So the Gemara says, Rashi explains that when we're talking about Bechor Meiser, let's consider. A firstborn animal a tenth animal, it has a blemish, which allows you to eat it without bringing it as a carbon. That's true. However, at the same time, it's psul hamukdashim. Once upon a time, it was a carbon, and now it's no longer a carbon. Here, if you're going to sell the meat instead of eating it yourself, so whatever revenue you're going to generate, that's revenue towards you. You're going to be the recipient of that revenue. And because it's psul hamukdashim, so it can't be sold in the marketplace like regular meat. So there really is simply no allowance to sell them in the market like you would with regular chulin. You can only sell it out of your home. Now, the difference between selling something out of your home versus selling something at a market. So in the market, so you have a lot of consumers. And you have a lot of potential buyers. Your price is going to go up. You're going to have a better chance of selling it and selling it at a good price. And v'hainu muchamilsa. So over there, when it comes to the sale of b'chor or ma'aser behema, so there, you're only selling out of your house. It's evident, it's self-evident that what you're selling is psula hamukdashim. And so therefore, there doesn't need to be any kind of reshima, no need for a special mark. But when we're talking about just regular psula hamukdashim, meaning any other carbon that developed a blemish, and now you redeem it, and in turn you're allowed to sell it. So let's now work backwards. Let's say you won't be given the opportunity to sell it. So that means as follows. So this was a carbon that now developed a blemish, and now you're going to redeem it. Now, when you think about the redemptive price, you're going to say to yourself, well, how much am I going to redeem it for? If I'm going to be hampered and hindered in selling it, so then how much is its value? So you know what? You're going to basically mark down the redemption value because you have to think about the resale value. And so the resale value is not high. The redemption price is not going to be high. And the Chachamim realize, well, that's not good. Meaning every dollar, every redemptive dollar is going towards the Beis HaMikdash. So that basically is temple funds. So on the one hand, we don't want Psula HaMikdashim to be sold in the marketplace. On the other hand, we want to generate as much revenue as we can for the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, because of the allowance to sell it in the marketplace, which obviously means that its resale value is going to be higher, meaning now that the redemptive sale or the redemptive price is going to be higher, that's more money generated to the Beis HaMikdash, and that's why these Psula HaMikdashim are in fact allowed to be sold in the marketplace like regular meat, and that's why they need a special reshima. Okay, so to succinctly summarize the Gemara, the chief consideration in terms of how you're selling Psula HaMikdashim is there going to be a loss towards the Beis HaMikdash? If there is going to be a loss to the Beis HaMikdash by lower redemptive value, so then an allowance is given to sell in the marketplace. If no loss is created for the Beis HaMikdash, like the redemptive, like Bechor and Ma'aser Behema, so then there is no allowance to sell it in the market. Continuing in the Gemara. As we're starting the next Gemara, the Gemara's question is very simple. I'm Rav Huna. Before we start with the Gemara, I'm just marking the place where we're beginning from. So let's go over the basics. Every time you shecht an animal, so three parts of the animal need to go to a Kohen. The three parts, as we've discussed in detail already, and at the end of today's daf, the Gemara is going to be discussing it in detail again. The Mishnah, the last Mishnah, Perek, goes into detail exactly anatomically what do these parts consider. But for our purposes right now, all we need to know, Zroa l'chai v'keva, right foreleg, l'chaye, the two cheeks of the animal, the jaw, the lower jaw of the animal, and the keva, the fourth stomach of the animal. Okay, that's and every time you shechted, those three parts have to go to a Kohen. We also have been learning that if a Kohen has a partnership in the animal in total, so that creates an exemption from these parts. Question. We already, even before I start with the question, one other basic piece of information that we went over. In terms of the distribution of these parts, it doesn't all have to go to the same Kohen. It is, one can go to one Kohen, another can go to another Kohen. If you remember, you can take the lechi, you can even divide that to two Kohanim. Okay. Now, here comes the question on the table. When we talk about the Zolochai Vekeva of every animal going to a Kohen, are these considered three parts of one unit? Meaning, every animal has a matana to give, and that matana is then subdivided into three different sections, Zorlachai v'keva, or are three independent distributions given from every animal? Now, it sounds very similar, but if you think about it and you see the Gemara's question, you will see that's actually going to be very important in terms of how to look at it. Do we look at it as one entity, which is just simply has three different components to it, or are they three distinct distributions? Let's consider now the Gemara's following question. Am Rav Huna. Shuta Barosh Patur Min Alechi. Shuta Biyad Patur Min Hazroa. Shuta B'nei Me'ayim Patur Min Hakeva. Let's say a Kohen has a very limited partnership in an animal. Let's say the Kohen says, you know what? I want to partner with you in this animal, but not the entire animal. I just simply want a partnership in the head. That's all I want. So then, according to Rav Huna, he's Patur Min Alechi. So that now creates an exemption in the portion that's given from the head, notably the lower jaw. If, let's say, he's going to be a partner in the in the entire arm of the animal, but only the arm of the animal, limited partnership, so then, once again, that creates an exemption of the zroa, but only the zroa. And shuta b'nei b'ayim, if, let's say, he decides he's going to be a partner with you in terms of the entire GI tract, so then that creates an exemption in the keva, but only in the keva. Rav Huna obviously views these three distributions as three distinct and separate distributions. And therefore, a partnership in one of the parts of the animal is only going to create an exemption for that part of the animal. V'chia barav amar afilu shuta b'achas me'am patur mikulan. And Chia barav says no. Once he has a partnership on part of the animal, even though it's a limited partnership, but that limited partnership creates an exemption in total to the entire animal, even to the parts of the animal that are not part of his partnership. Now, again, what it comes down to is the basic issue and the basic question of how do we look at these three distributions? Is it one distribution, just simply three different sections of the animal, or are they three distinct distributions? And it sounds like Rav Huna is of the opinion that they are three distinct distributions. There's no question of right. Meaning, if it's all one distribution and the Kohen is now a partner, even though it's a limited partnership, that creates an exemption in the entire animal. Period. The Gemara is going to challenge. Harosha Levi Kula Shelcha. If, let's say, now the conversation between the Kohen and the owner of the animal says that, look, I'm going to retain the head and the rest of it's going to go to you. Afilu Echa Mimea Barosh. And even if the Kohen says, you know what, I don't even want the entire head. I just want a fraction. I want shares of the head. Even a small shareholder. So pater. So now there's going to be an exemption. Now an exemption in what? Simple reading of the braisa is that we're talking about an exemption of the parts of the head, but no other part of the animal. Similarly, hayashali v'kosho chavil afilu echami me'amiyad pater. Same story where the Kohen now becomes a partner. Either he retains the entire arm for himself, or he's just simply a minority shareholder of the arm. There's going to now be an exemption of the zroa. B'nei ma'ayim shaliv v'kol shachavi afilu achamim mea behem pater. Same thing with the b'nei ma'ayim. If the Kohen says that I want the entire GI track, or even if he says I just want a small partnership in the GI track, so then he's going to be pater. So now my la pater min alechi v'chai b'kulan, pater min azroa v'chai b'kulan, pater min akeva v'chai b'kulan. Now, again, the simplest way to read the braisa, which the Gemara now does, is that the exemption is only going to be in the limited partnership. If the limited partnership is only limited to the head, so the exemption is only for the portion of the head, and not the keva, and not the zroa. That's a simple reading of the braisa. So the Gemara says, well, that is a simple reading of the braisa, but we could read it the other way. Lo, patami kulan. So the Gemara says it could be that the exemption is for the entire animal, even though he has a limited partnership, and even though his limited partnership is only on one of the parts of the animal. We could suggest that what the braisa means is that the exemption is on all parts of the animal. So the Gemara says, "Velisni patur mikulan." So the Gemara says, well, the braisa had a tremendous opportunity to be super clear about that point. And all the braisa had to do was just add one more word, patur mikulan. And you're telling me that the braisa, for its interest in being concise, is now going to leave out that one word? And the braisa had a chance to be so clear about this, va'otanya. And furthermore, on top of that question, which in of itself is a really strong question, the Gemara says, I also have another braisa. Harosh ali v'kul shalcha afilu echa mimea barosh pater min alechi v'chayiv b'kulan. This braisa cannot say it any clearer. If the limited partnership between the Kohen and the Yisrael is only on the head, the exemption is only on the lechi and not on the other parts. So tiyufta dechia barav tiyufta. So the Gemara says, although it was presented as a machlokus, here there really is no machlokus. Or Chiya Bara's position is so untenable, it's indefensible. And so therefore we're left only with the opinion of Rav Huna, which basically means that if I have a Kohen's limited partnership and only one section of the animal, the exemption only is going to be for that section of the animal and not the other sections of the animal. I'm Rav Chisda Hamasisa Atiyasi L'Chiya Bar Rav, D'Tanya. So Rav Chisda says, I know what happened. Meaning, I know why Chiya Bar Rav had this understanding that the three sections, the Zor L'Chai V'Keva, are really one distribution just divided into three parts of the animal. I know why he arrived at that conclusion. Now, as we pointed out, it's a refuted conclusion. It's a conclusion that is not accepted by the Gemara, but at least I can indicate where he got this from. And it's from the following Braisa. Esrim v'arba matanos kohanim heim. There are 24 different gifts to the kohanim. Okay, so 24 is the number. Meaning, whenever we talk about distributions given to the Kohanim, so the number is 24, and this Braisa, which is mentioned over here, it's also mentioned at the end of Baba Kama, is going to go over all 24. V'kulin inu l'Aaron l'vanav, and these distributions are going to go to Aaron and all of his descendants, b'chlal uprat, using methodologies of klal uprat, ubris melach, and also a covenant of salt. The Gemara's point over here simply is that it's generated through various limudim, and on top of that, there's also Bris Melach. In other words, the covenant that was ratified between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Kohanim is like salt, going to be preserved forever. So too, this is going to be everlasting. Now, if you do your distributions correctly, so you're going to get all these benefits. And if you don't, you're going to be in violation of all of the above. The Elohein, and they are as follows. Now, before listing the 24, so this Braisa organizes. Eser b'Mikdash v'arba b'Yerushalayim v'eser b'Gvulin. So there's going to be 10 distributions in the Beis HaMikdash, 4 in Yerushalayim and 10 outside of the area of the Beis HaMikdash. Eser b'Mikdash, the 10 in the Beis HaMikdash are. Now, I'm going to read them quickly. And again, just remember, the entire reason, right, they should review this and review this again. The entire reason we're bringing it down right now in the context of our Gemara is just simply to highlight why Chiya Bar Rav thought that the Matanos are considered one unit, even though we've concluded that that's not so. They are three totally separate distributions. But this Braisa now is going to be the reason why he thinks it's one unit. And so really what you want to get to in this Braisa is where it says Matanos, and you'll see. You'll see why it is he thought it was one unit. So the 10 that are in the Beis HaMikdash, these are the 10 matanos given to the Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash, are the Chatzos and the Chatzos Hof and the Ashram Vada and the Ashram Talui, Vizviv Cheshal Mitzibar, Velog Shem Hashem Mitzar, Vishtei Alachem, Alachem Aponim, Vishayara Menachos, Umenchas HaOmer. Okay, I numbered them in my Gemara. Okay, so those are 10 different distributions. They're basically karbanos. And now would have been a nice time for me to go through each one of the 10 individually, but I'm taking into consideration where we're holding, and so we move on. Arba b'Yerushalayim. There are four distributions that are given to the Kohen in Yerushalayim. Habachor v'Habikurim, Omor men Atoda me'el Nazir. So they are the firstborn and the Bikurim and the section taken off from a carbon Toda and the El Nazir, the ram of the Nazir. So these are distributions given to the Kohen where the Kohen now is going to be able to eat them in Yerushalayim, but only in Yerushalayim, not outside of Yerushalayim. The Oros, sorry. Umur min atoda me'el nazir, that's considered one, and oros kachim, and the hides of karbanos, of a ola. Okay, thank you. Okay, so those are the four that are in Yerushalayim. And eser bigvulin, and now we go outside of Yerushalayim, and now we're going to go talk about, there are 10 distributions that are given to the Kohanim outside of Yerushalayim. So they are Shuma v'shumas meiser, we're going to count that as one, and chala, and reshes hagez, and matanos, and pidgin aben, and pidgin petach hamor, ustei achusiv, ustei charamim, v'gezel hager. Okay, so those are going to be the 10 distributions that are given to the Kohen outside of Yerushalayim, anywhere in Eretz Yisrael. Now, what we just saw together in this listing is in the 10 that are outside of Yerushalayim, so one of them, number 5 in my count, is matanos. Matanos are the Zor L'Chai V'Keva. So here in our 24 gifts, one of the 24 is matanos. That's it. It's a single unit. So who's over medekach chashiv lula matanos bechada chada ninu? So that's what he thought. Okay, so in this Bryce's organization of the 24 gifts, matanos is listed as one, and that's why he thought it's one unit. And that's why he thought that if a Kohen has a limited partnership and only one section of the animal, that creates an exemption for the other two matanos of that animal, and that's why he thought the way he did, even though it's a refuted position. But at least you understand now how he got there. Velohi. But the Gemara says, but if you carefully consider the Braisa, you will see clearly that just because something is listed as one does not mean that it's one. For example, in fact, I made the mistake when I read the Braisa. Consider now that in the listing of four things of Yerushalayim, number three on the list in Yerushalayim is Mor Mina Toda, the section taken off from the Karban Toda, four loaves that are taken off of the Karban Toda, given to the Kohen, and El Nazir. Now, the sections taken off the Karban Toda and the El Nazir, they're not the same thing. They're not even coming from the same person. One is the Karban Toda, and the other is the concluding Karbanos of the Nazir. They're not the same thing. So, Ela Kevin de Dami Al Hadadi Chashalu Kechada. So, but because they're similar to one another in nature, so therefore they're listed together as one unit in this Tosefta. But Hachinam, given the Dami La'adad, Dichashalu Kechada. So too, when I talk about the Matanos, even though they are three separate distributions, but because they are the Matanos coming from one animal, so therefore the Braisa puts it together as one. But the listing of one does not mean that they're one unit, it just simply means that they're similar to one another, and therefore they're going to be listed as one. Okay. Ibai Lahum. Question. Mahu. Let's say the Kohen says the following to the owner of the animal. Here's the deal we're going to make. It's a sweet deal. Of course, not for you. But it's a tremendously sweet deal. I'll tell you what. You keep the head to yourself, and the rest of the animal is going to go to me. So basically now he's creating not a partnership in the animal, but a clear, in other words, they're not dividing the animal by shares, but they're actually marking off which parts for you and which parts for me. I'll keep the majority of the animal, you keep the head. Now, why is it the sweetest deal in the world for the Kohen? Because of the head that he just allowed the Yisrael to keep. So we know that there are matanos, of course, that come from the head, specifically the lechi. So that means that a significant part of the head that he allowed the Yisrael to keep, so then there's going to be a distribution from that, notably the lechi. So now the Kohen, after having agreed with this person that he's going to keep the rest of the animal, oh, and by the way, that Rosh that you quote-unquote kept, well, also, I'm entitled to my distribution from the Rosh, meaning the Lechi. Good, right? So now, basically, what comes down to the question basically comes down to the following. Look, this clearly, there was a partnership in this animal. But it happens to be that, again, we're not talking about shares. We're talking about where part of the animal went to the Kohen, the other part went to the Yisrael. Maybe we can make the following argument. You know, the vast majority of this animal went to the Kohen. So I know that technically speaking, the Yisrael got the Rosh. And I also know I also know that the Rosh has a distribution that goes to the Kohen. But can't we say that basically the animal's the Kohen's animal? He did get the majority of it. And so therefore, there should be an exemption for the distribution of the Rosh. We're going to try to make that argument. Mahu. Basar chiyuv azlin v'chiyuv v'gabi Yisrael hu. Oduma basar ikar behem azlin v'ikar behem ad kohen hu. And so the Gemara says, look, we can argue in one of two ways. On one hand, we could just simply look at who got what. Period. The Kohen got the majority of the animal. The owner, or I should say not owner, the Yisrael got the head. And as far as who got how much of it, who cares? When all said and done, the Kohen got the majority of the animal, the owner got the head, the owner now has to make a distribution of the head that he received, even though the vast majority of the animal was taken by somebody who's exempt. But doesn't matter, the Yisrael got the head. The other argument the Gemara is trying to make is, no, take a look at where most of the animal went. Since most of the animal went to the Kohen, so that means that there's going to be an exemption on the entire animal. So Tashma, so the Gemara says, well, I think I know the answer based on the following braisa. Ovikochan the Kohen Shemasu Tzornim LeYisrael. If I have a non-Jew or a Kohen that gives the sheep over to Yisrael, Ligzoz, in order for shearing, Pater. I'm sorry. The Ovikochan the Kohen Shemasu Tzornim LeYisrael, Ligzoz, Pater. So there's going to be an exemption. An exemption over here. Regarding rations, I guess. The next parak, the first shearings are supposed to go to a Kohen, but over here, if a Kohen is an owner in the animal, so then there's going to be exemption. So, patur rations, I guess. If you are purchasing the shearings of a non-Jew, so you're going to be patur from rations, I guess. Meaning, what you did is, instead of purchasing the sheep, you just purchased the shearings. So purchasing the shearings is going to create an exemption. And the Gemara says, now, even though, when it comes to the shearing, so let's consider, even though the vast majority of the animal is going to be owned by a non-Jew or by a Kohen, meaning somebody who creates an exemption, the shearings that are purchased are going to be basically following the animal. If the animal's exempt, the shearings are going to be exempt as well. On the other hand, the Brisa says that's not true with Zor L'chai V'keva. When it comes to Zor L'chai V'keva, I don't care how much the Kohen or the Ovi Kochavim received of the animal. When all is said and done, you follow the Chiyuv. If the Yisrael got the head, even though that's all he got, and even though the rest of the animal was taken by a Kohen who is creating an exemption, but that exemption is only for the part that Kohen took. If the Yisrael ended up with the head, even though it's a minority portion of the animal, Basar Chiyuva Azlinan. That head is obligated in the distribution of Lechi, and that's it. So Shema Mina. So the Gemara says, okay. So story over. Discussion over. Even though the Yisrael received a minority portion, and even though the majority was taken by a person who creates an exemption, doesn't matter. If the Yisrael gets the Rosh, so then, if the Yisrael gets the Rosh, so he has to make a Matana of the Rosh that he received. Uriminu. Okay, I'm sorry. Im amar lo chutz mina matanos patur mina matanos. Okay. We are looking back at the Mishnah, and we are going back to a simple transaction that's made between a Kohen and a Yisrael. The Kohen and the Yisrael are arranging a sale of an animal, and he says that what I'd like to do is I'd like to buy everything from you except for the matanos. So then patur min matanos. So then he's going to be exempt from having to give the matanos. However, viriminu, the Gemara now quotes a brisa which seemingly is going to go against it. Amenas shamatanos shali. So no saying lechol Kohen sheyirtze. Let's say the Kohen does the following transaction with a Yisrael. He says, look, here's what I want to do. I'm going to sell you an animal. I have an animal to sell, and I'm going to sell you an animal, but with the condition, the stipulation that I'm going to sell you the entire animal, but he doesn't say the word chutz. He doesn't put an exclusion in the sale. He says a condition. I'll sell you the animal, but on the condition that the matanos are going to be retained by me. Oh. Now, wait one second. Now, this is where it gets interesting, and everyone probably sees the direction we're headed. You see, over here, the seller, in this case being the Kohen, is not putting an exclusion in the sale. He's putting a condition in the sale. And he's trying to stipulate and basically, and I'm using Tosus' language, rewrite the Torah. Meaning the Torah, whenever an animal is being shechted by a Yisrael, so yes, he has to make a distribution, but also he has a right to decide who to give it to. It's what's called Tovah Sana, as we've discussed time and again. Over here, when the Kohen now is selling the animal to the Yisrael, he's basically trying to say, you know, there's going to be distribution anyway, so I'm going to sell you with the animal, but on condition, amanas, that I get to keep a portion of the animal. So here, it doesn't work. The sale goes through. The condition is basically invalidated. The purchaser is going to get the entire animal with the Zor L'chai V'keva. And the purchaser is going to be able to make the executive decision of who he's going to give it to. Now, the Gemara says, but I'm confused. Because just a moment earlier we said that if the Kohen sells an animal, and instead of saying the words amanas, he says chutz, well, that's going to work. Well, what's the difference? But the Gemara says, what's the difference? The difference is obvious. And the Gemara now makes exactly this point. Amanas achutz karamis. You're comparing the language of amanas versus the language of chutz. Chushir amanas, lav shiura. The difference is very obvious. When the Kohen is selling an animal, the animal belongs to the Kohen. And if he wants to retain any portion of the animal, by all means, he has every right to do so. So when he's selling the animal with the language of, but I'm retaining this part, okay, so that's a retention. That's not a condition. I'm selling you all the parts except this. Masha Enke, when he says amanas, what he's trying to do is rewrite the Torah. And that you can't do. Uriminu, the Gemara says, fine. But I will ask you the following question. Amanasha hamatana shali, hamatana shalo. So the Gemara says, but in another brisa, the language of amanas is being used, and it seemingly it works. Well, what just happened there? So the Gemara says, Ba'apligi, marsav amanas shiruhu, marsav amanas lav shiruhu. So the Gemara says, well, that's just a very technical discussion. When you're using the language of amanas, what is the intent of that clause? Does amanas mean that I'm excluding it from the sale? Does amanas mean on condition so that? Meaning I'm selling it to you, but on condition so that. So the Gemara says, so that's the only difference between the brisa we just quoted versus the previous brisa. The previous brisa understood as a condition. This brisa understands amanas as a clause of exclusion. Amalam mechorli b'nei me'aha. Okay. We go back now to our Mishnah, and we are going over the last part of the Mishnah. In the last part of the Mishnah, so we had a shochet shechting an animal, selling it to a buyer, and he sold him the entire GI tract, and including the GI tract is the cave of the fourth stomach of the animal. And so now, you knock on the door. Cohen comes in. Hi. I heard you just bought the entire GI tract. Perfect. You know the fourth stomach? That's the cave. It's not yours. I mean, right? It belongs to the Kohanim. So, and I'm a Cohen. Okay, so I'll help myself. Now again, as we already discussed in yesterday's daf, it has to be a Nesina, right? The story that I just depicted is not accurate, right? The person who has the keva has to give it to a Kohen. Okay, that part we all understand. But the issue that we're dealing with now is as follows, and that, of course, is reimbursement. Now, in the Mishnah, so what did the Mishnah tell us vis-a-vis reimbursement? So is the buyer of that is entitled to reimbursement from the butcher? And the answer, said the Mishnah, is it's really simple. It depends how it was sold to him. If it was sold to him as a unit, meaning I'm selling you the GI tract, not by weight, but just simply as a unit, so then, of course, there's not going to be any reimbursement. Because understood in the sale does not include the keva. In other words, the butcher was not the butcher was not really in the right to sell the keva. It wasn't his. It belongs to the Kohanim. And when the buyer buys it, he's not buying the keva. So therefore, there's no reimbursement. However, when the butcher is selling it, he's selling it by weight, by the pound, and he weighed the keva, obviously now, so the buyer can go back to the seller and demand a reimbursement. Good. That's what we learned back in the Mishnah. That part's very clear. Here's the Gemara's discussion. So, Amalo mechorli b'nei mea, Amarav, lo shanu elo sheshakal atzmo, aval shakal otavach hadin imatavach. Now, this idea that when sold by weight, that the buyer can go back and demand a reimbursement from the butcher, that is only talking about a situation where, when the lokeach got it, he actually weighed it for himself. he weighed it himself. But if the tabach, if the butcher was the one who actually weighed out the meat, so then hadin imatavach. So that means to say now, the litigation is going to be only with the butcher. Now with litigation, what litigation? Meaning the litigation that we're describing over here is basically the Kohen's litigation. Look at Rashi. Aval shakal lo hatavach hadin shel Kohen umachlukaso utviaso af al hatavachu. Rav over here, when he says that the Kohen now can follow one of two parties, meaning who is the aggrieved party over here? The aggrieved party is really the Kohen. I understand that we're talking now about a reimbursement vis-a-vis the buyer of that of the digestive tract. But truth of the matter is, when all said and done, it's the Kohen's keva. And now you have basically two parties involved in this theft. Okay? And now I'm going to call it a theft because effectively that's what it is. The keva really belongs to the Kohen. Now I know the Kohen is a group of people. But right now let's identify him as one individual just to make this case as clear as possible. And now this Kohen is the aggrieved party. He's the one who is the victim of the theft. And who exactly stole? Well, I could really point it to one of two people now. In other words, the butcher was the one who took the keva and put it on the scale. So we'll call him thief number one. Then what happens is he then goes ahead and he sells it to the buyer. We'll call him thief number two. And so the question becomes the following question. And the Gemara Baba Kama makes this point as clear as possible. Let's say you turn around and you steal an item from me, and somebody then takes it and steals it from you. And so now, and I never had Yeush. So who can I go after in terms of any kind of compensation? Can I go after thief number one? Can I go after thief number two? Can I go after either one of them? The Gemara in Baba Kama cites the opinion of Rav Chista, which we're going to cite here in just a moment, that let's not even make the case so dramatic where there are two thieves, one after another. Let's call the first one a thief, and let's call the second one just simply a buyer. Okay, the second one doesn't even have to be a thief. So someone buys it from the thief. So who can the aggrieved party go to? Who can the victim go to? According to Rav Chista, I can go after either party. I can go after the thief himself, or I can go after the one who bought it. And I know there's a lot of follow-up discussion that we need to have. Did the buyer know? Did he not know? Et cetera, et cetera. Baba Kama, 10th Perek, discusses all this in much greater detail. But for our purposes right now, so basically we're looking at the similar construct, where the tabach, when he shechted the animal, he should have given the kever to the kohen, period. We talked about that just yesterday. He didn't. He then, in turn, sold it to somebody. So the tavach really is the thief. The person who he sold it to, again, we can call him thief number two, or whatever. Whatever label you want to use for it. And the kohen can go, according to Rav, after whichever party he would like to. Who has ever got enough money to compensate him. Now, keep in mind, by the way, this does get a little bit complicated. Because if you remember, just a couple days ago, we discussed that if the matanos are no longer in existence, so there is no liability and there is no compensation. So really, the discussion over here in our Gemara is a little bit limited because the matanos have to be in existence. Okay, so that part, admittedly, is a little bit of a variable. Makes it a little bit different, but still, effectively, the point is the same. And Rav Asi, on the other hand, as we go back to our Gemara, Rav Asi amar afilo shakol lo tavach hadin imo. And Rav Asi says that even if the tabach took it, the litigation of the kohen is only going to be with the buyer. Okay, now lema b'derav chista kamiflagi. Damar rav chista gazav lo yisashu abalam ava acher vachlo ratzim izegova ratzim izegova. Now the Gemara says, well, now we have that statement of Rav Chista in the 10th parak of Baba Kama. Rav Chista says that if a thief steals something and then somebody comes along and consumes it, so according to Rav Chista, the victim can go after either party, the one, the thief, or the secondary thief. Right? Let's call him. Purchaser. Let's call purchaser. The purchaser, the consumer, whatever. In other words, the second person who actually consumed it. Good. Okay. Danny, I acknowledge that. Meaning it gets a little bit tricky, and you're right. You're absolutely right. If the keva is gone, so then there is no liability. But let's assume right now, for our purposes, that the keva is still there. Who is the kohen now going to have to who is he going to litigate with? So it's seemingly now this debate in our Gemara between Rav and Rav Asi is seemingly predicated on: do you subscribe to Rav Chista or do you not subscribe to Rav Chista? Mar isle de Rav Chista, mar isle de Rav Chista. And the Gemara basically puts it exactly in these terms, where according to Rav, the assumption is that Rav says that the kohen can go after either party, either the butcher or the one that he sold it to. So in other words, so what Rav is basically doing is, I subscribe to Rav Chista. And meanwhile, Rav Asi doesn't subscribe to Rav Chista. The Gemara says maybe it's really that simple. And the Gemara says, lo, dekulei amis lehu de Rav Chista. So the Gemara says, no, you don't have to do that. We can have everybody in full agreement and cooperation with the opinion of Rav Chista. When somebody's the victim of theft, so he can either go after the thief or whoever took it from the thief. Everyone subscribes to Rav Chista. V'hacha b'matanos kuna nigzolos kamiflagi. Marsav nigzolos and marsav ein nigzolos. Over here, the issue becomes the following issue. Somebody takes the matanos kahuna. Are you a thief? Now, I can give you a bunch of labels to put on that person who takes the matanos kahuna. It's a bad person. He's doing something that he shouldn't be doing. Okay? And we can go on and on. But in other words, the question effectively is as follows. When the tavach shechs an animal and now has these matanos, is he, quote unquote, the owner of these matanos? with then the responsibility in turn of distributing it over to the Kohen. That's one way to say it. Or the other way to say it is he's just simply a custodian. The moment that he shechs the animal, I can even go even before that point in time, but the moment that he shechs the animal, these distributions already belong to the Kohen. And he's just simply but only a custodian on these items. And the Gemara says, and that could really be the issue between Rav and Ravasi. Meaning when Rav says that you can go after, you the Kohen can go after either party. You can go after the buyer, you can go after the seller. So the way Rav is viewing it is that the butcher had these matanos, and then when he in turn sells them to the buyer, so that basically what he's doing is he's taking something and he's selling it. In other words, that the sale is a real sale, and the act of theft is a real theft. And that's why Rav is of the opinion that the Kohen can go after either party. And what Ravasi's position is that no, when the butcher sold those matanos, that wasn't a sale. They were never his to sell. He was merely a custodian of them from the very beginning. And so therefore, you're telling me now that he's going after the butcher. The butcher, again, he did a lot of things wrong, but he didn't. It wasn't even a sale. You don't even look at it as a sale. It's not an act of gzela because it was never his to begin with. The Gemara says that could be the machlokas between Rav and Ravasi.
What difference does it make whether he buys it as a unit
or by weight? That's just in terms of the halacha of reimbursement. Meaning that's a specific halacha regarding whether or not the buyer is entitled to reimbursement. If he bought it by a unit, so then he's not entitled to reimbursement because the keva was never part of the deal. And he understood that. If he bought it by weight, even though the keva is not part of the deal, but he did weigh the keva, and he paid for that, so therefore he's obviously entitled to reimbursement. Now, what we're going to do basically is say over the same thing again, just independent. Rav Amar Matanos Kohanos Nigzalos, Rav Asi Amar Matanos Kohanos De Nigzalos. And good. Is there an act of gzela? Is it legally gzela when somebody goes ahead and takes a matanos? Rav says it is an act of gzela. Which again, how do you view the matanos before they are given? They are mine, but I'm required to give them. That's Rav's viewpoint. And therefore, if I do anything other than give them to the Kohen, I'm a gazlan. And Rav Asi says, no, you're just simply a bad person. But you're not legally a gazlan because they were never yours. You are merely a trustee. You are simply a custodian, but you are not actually the owner of those items. So really interesting in terms of how the Gemara is debating and looking at the matanos. Do they either A, belong to the owner of the animal with a requirement to give them, that's Rav, or B, no. They're just simply in his custody, in which he then is obligated to give them, but they're never actually his. Adkan, let us continue in the Mishnah. We're starting now the Mishnah on Kufla Medalam and Aleph. Gershon is Gaira Vahisal Parah, Nishchata Ashlan is Gaira Pata, Mishnah is Gaira Chayef. Safek, Pata Shamotzi Mechaver Alavaraya. Okay? I'm going to give a little bit of narrative to this Mishnah, but the narrative I give to this Mishnah is just going to make it a little more colorful, but you'll get the point. When a non-Jew, as we already discussed, is exempt from giving the matanas, a Jew is obligated. That part we knew. The person over here is going through the conversion process. And he figures, you know what? After I convert, I'm going to make a tremendous kiddush because it's very exciting. I'm going to convert to Yiddishkeit. And so what he does is he takes an animal, he gives it over to the shochet, and he says, look, I plan on converting, so do me a favor, shech the animal, and then after the conversion, we'll have a big kiddush. Good. So he gave the animal to the shochet, to shecht, and we know for sure that it was shechted before conversion. Fine. So that means that the animal of a non-Jew was shechted, and so therefore there is no matanos obligation. Mm-hmm. If we know for sure that the animal was shechted after the conversion, so then matanos are in fact required to be given from the animal. What if we don't know? In other words, so conversion took place midday, and now we went to the butcher, and he says, when did you shecht? He says, about midday. Well, was it before or after noon? I don't know. It was, you know, I didn't have my watch out. I simply don't know. So we are entering into the world of Safek. So what does the Mishnah tell us? The Mishnah tells us, Hamotzi Mechaver Alavaraya. Here it is. Here's the Mishnah giving us the most basic rule when it comes to monetary dispute. If we don't know whether or not there needs to be a distribution from this animal, it's a question of Safek. And over here, it's only Safek Mamon. I'm giving away some of the Gemara upcoming, but you already figured it out. This is only a Mamonous issue. The Matanos do not have Kedusha. It's just a monetary obligation. So therefore, if it's a suffix, and I don't know whether or not I'm obligated to give these matanos over to the Kohen, so I'm otzi mechaver ala v'raya. You know for sure that the shochet shechted it before or after the midday? I don't know. You don't know. And now you're going to take it away from me because of a suffix? You don't. And right, in other words, possession is 9/10 of the law. In Yiddishkeit, 10/10. Good. We can't say, not only can we say that, it is. But it's a monetary issue. It's mamonos. It's a mitzvah of money. In other words, the Torah is telling us where to take our money and where to put our money. But if it's the only time that there is an obligation is if it was a possession of a Jew. And he simply doesn't know whether he possessed it, whether the chiyuv started when he was Jewish or not Jewish. It comes down to a monetary issue. In a moment, the Gemara is going to think for a second like what you're suggesting, but really when you boil it down, and that's what the Mishnah is doing. The Mishnah is just bringing it down to a monetary issue. Ki asar Rav Dimi Amar Ramilei Rabbi Shimon Malakish L'Rav Yochanan. Rav Dimi comes in from Eretz Yisrael and he says, there was a dialogue that took place between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan, and let me share the dialogue with you. Now, by the way, we know what's going to happen at the end of the sugya. Rav Dim is giving one version of how the discussion went, so then Ravin is going to come and give a slightly different version. Okay, so already you've been learning long enough, you'll know big picture discussions in terms of how the Gemara is structured.
Is that no exception?
Is there any exception to this? There's got to be. But Tanan, Suffolk Pater. So we learned in our Mishnah very clearly that if it's a question of Suffolk, you're going to be exempt. Amas Feka Lakula. Okay, so we're going to be Mako by a Suffolk. Or Reminhu, and the Gemara now challenges based on the Mishnah and Peah. Now the Mishnah and Peah is describing specifically the mitzvah of Leket. The mitzvah of Leket. I'm in the field, I'm harvesting my field. Any grains that are still connected to the ground, so those don't have a chiyuv of leket. And of course not, because I didn't harvest them yet. When does leket occur? After I harvest, and when I leave one or two behind me. If I leave one or two behind me, so the Torah says that's leket, that's for the onion. Okay, so, chori hanamalim shebesocha kama, harei elu shabal habayis. If, let's say, I have an ant hole, and what the ants did is that they took some of the stalks and they brought it into their hole. Okay? Productive ants. And but they took it from stalks that are connected to the ground. So that means to say that there's no obligation of leket, and they belong to the owner of the field. Good. Now, shalachar kotzrim, however, if let's say harvesting has already been done, and now as we go back, we see that there is stalks of wheat in the ant hole. Now, it could belong to Leket, could not belong to Leket. Quite frankly, there could be a couple circumstances, a couple scenarios. One is that the ant took it before it was harvested. The other is that the ant took it after it was harvested. So what does the Mishnah tell us? Al-yonim le'aniyim v'hatachtonim shel bal habayis. The ones that are higher up in the ant hole, so they are going to belong to the aniyim, and the ones that are lower belong to the baal habayis. And you see Rashi over here. Rashi tries to give a better description of what it means, upper versus lower. Let us say it very simply: if the trend seems to indicate that this was already harvested wheat and it was just simply left over after the harvest, so it belongs to the aniyim. If we can make a better argument that this was taken by the ants at an earlier point in time while still connected to the ground, so then it belongs to the baal habayis. And Rabbi Meir Omer HaKol HaAniyim Shesafek Leket Leket. And Rabbi Meir says that I don't care what story you construct. When all said and done, it's a Safek, and all Safek are going to be, we're going to tilt towards the Aniyim. And anything which is Safek Leket is going to be designated as Leket. This is Reish Lakish's question to Rav Yochanan. Now, what's the question? The question is that we just learned together in the Remeir's position that anything which is a suffix, so we're going to go and make a distribution out of it, even though we don't know for sure. What did we learn in our Mishnah? Our anonymous Mishnah, which presumably is Rabbi Meir. What we learned in our Mishnah is that if it's a suffix of Matnas Kahuna, we don't give it to the Kohen. Now, you could make a distinction between a Kohen versus an Ani, But the assumption is no. A distribution is a distribution. And they're one and the same. Our Mishnah says that a Safek, the owner gets to keep. Reb Meir, in that Mishnah Peah, says that if it's a Safek, we give it to the poor. That's called a stira. So Amalei al tikni tenish b'loshen Yochanan nishon osa. So Rav Yochanan gives an answer which he gives frequently when challenged like this, and that is that Mishnah and Peah, that's Rav Meir Shita? Nah. That's one person's view of Rav Meir Shita. Detanya. Now Rav Yochanan quotes the Braisa. Rav Yehuda ben Agra, Omer Mishum Rabbi Meir, Safik Leket Leket, Safik Shechas Shechas, Safik Peah Peah. So the Braisa that Rav Yochanan says, now he's quoting Rav Meir, but here's the part we have to focus on. Rav Yehuda ben Agra says in the name of Rav Meir. So it's one Tana's view of what Rav Meir says, and so therefore this is not the authoritative approach of Rav Meir. So Reish Lakish says, you can quote whoever you want to quote. You want to quote Ben Tadal, not necessarily the name of any Tana, a fabricated name. Meaning, I don't care who said it, and it makes sense. The idea that we're going to have a suffix ani, and we're going to tilt in the direction of the ani, even though it's a suffix, it makes total sense. The pasuk says ani pasuk in Tehillim ani v'rash hatzdiku, that when you have a poor person, ani and rush are synonymous. I'm sure there are subtle differences between the two, but hatzdiku. But whenever you have any kind of litigation and you're not sure, well, why don't you trend in the direction? Now, what does that mean? My hatzdiku lema bedinim. Now, we're talking about regular monetary litigation. And basically, if there is a question of monetary debate and dispute, you mean to tell me that we're going to bend the laws, the monetary laws, in favor of the ani? Of course we wouldn't do that. V'aksi v'dal lo sadar b'yibo. Pasuk in Mishpatim says very clearly that when litigating and when a judge has to arrive at the conclusion, you base it on basic premises of law. And you don't pervert the law just because, hey, I'm advocating on behalf of a poor, let him win, he's poor. No. In other words, when going with din, you have to follow the law. Elat tzadek mishocha v'tein lo. Rather, what the Pasuk in Tehillim must mean is that when talking about matanus aniyim, when you're talking about distribution to the poor, so there, you know what? If you're not sure, we're going to go in his favor. That's the Pasuk in Tehillim. So Reish Lakish says to Rav Yochanan, I don't care whether it's an authoritative viewpoint of Rav Meir, a non-authoritative viewpoint of Rav Meir, it makes a lot of sense.
Good logic.
It's good logic. It's great logic. So, Amar Rava, Hachapar becheskes petura kaimei kama becheskes chiyuva kaimei. So Rava says, the resolution of the debate is very simple. Let's take the following into consideration. Let's start with the case of the animal and our convert. So before he converts, what's the status of the animal vis-a-vis matanos? Exemption.
None.
Exemption. In other words, there's no obligation. The animal is owned by a non-Jew. He's converting, but the chazakah, its presumed status is, it's not going to be obligated. Now you have a suffix where the presumption started with no obligation. Okay, we're gonna head towards the chazaka. However, when it comes to the fields, the kama, so there is over there an obligation to give to the poor. So there we start with obligation. So since we start with obligation, so anytime we have a suffix, so the chazaka tells us, well, we started with a cheskas chiyuv, so therefore we're going to go in favor of the ani. So Amar Abai Vare Isa Nasis Ashlon Isgar Patam Menachal Mishin Isgar Chayev Safik Chayev. So Abai says, well, why don't we take the following into consideration? Same discussion, but we're going to talk in terms of chala. So a guy made a dough and he converted. And when was the dough made? Now, admittedly, over here, it's a little bit trickier to come up with a scenario of suffix, but it's not so hard. In other words, he gave the dough to somebody else to make and while he was converting. And he doesn't know the timing in terms of his conversion and when the dough was actually made. And so, is it obligated in challah? So if it's a question of suffix, we're going to go l'chiyuv. We're going to go in the direction of obligation. So over there, what's the chazakah? What's the status? What was the presumed status of that dough? Not obligated. So shouldn't we say pater? So amalei safik yisur lechomer safik mamon lekula. And here, Danny, is where the Gemara says it. When it comes to challah, we're talking about something that not only is a monetary issue, it's also an isser issue. A non-kohen eating challah is like a non-kohen eating truma with a punishment of misa b'dei shamayim. So it's not just a monetary component to the challah, it's also an isser component to the challah as well. There we're going to say suffik isura l'chumra. It's a suffik isser d'araisa. Over here, when we're talking about the matanos, it's just monetary law. And therefore, suffik l'kula. And we're just going to quickly run through the eight different sfeikos. And basically, the distinction between the first four and the last four. First four have components of Isser, therefore Suffolk L'Chomra. The last four are just monetary issues, and therefore Suffolk L'Kula. And let's see all eight of them. Karban Ishto, his wife gave birth. He doesn't know whether it was before or after the conversion. Okay, admittedly strange, but fine. It's fine. It's strange. So v'chala ubechor behema tameo ubechor behema Torah. So these four cases all involve not only suffik but suffik regarding iser, and so therefore the suffik is going to be lechiyuv. However, as we turn to the top of the next amud, reishis hagez matanos pigeon aben pigeon peter chamor. So these are strictly monetary issues: the shearings, the zrolachai v'keva, the five slime that you give to the kohen when you have your firstborn, pigeon peter chamor. The sheep that you're redeeming your firstborn donkey with. So all those are just monetary issues, so therefore we're going to be pater. He also Ravin Amar. Now, here comes, and we'll finish up today with this. Here comes Ravin with his version of the dialogue. We know that Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan had a debate or a dialogue over the consistency or seemingly inconsistency. The way Rav Dimi presented the debate, it starts with our Mishnah, compared to the Mishnah and Peah. Now, Ravin says no, meaning there was a dialogue between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan, and it was over the Mishnah and Peah, but Ki Asa Ravin Amar Kama Kama Ramile. The way that he presented it is it's a discrepancy between the Mishnah and Peah versus the Brisa that describes the Kama. So basically, it's not a comparison of our Mishnah in Chulin to the Mishnah and Peah, but rather the Mishnah and Peah versus the Brisa regarding the same topic. Okay, period. We'll pause over here. We ran out of time. Tomorrow we pick it up at the top of the Amud. Tomorrow we finish the parak. We'll start the 11th parak of the Masechta.